For almost 2,000 years, the Catholic Church has pointed the way toward salvation through Jesus Christ. For each of us, that journey starts in darkness, as if in a cave. We invite you now to come with us as we seek wisdom and truth by way of faith and reason with your guides, Mark Tuttle and Timothy O'Donnell. Join us in the Catholic Cave. Welcome once again to the Catholic Cave. I'm Kent Blanford. In the cave with me, Mr. Mark Tuttle, Mr. Timothy O'Donnell. Gentlemen, when Pontius Pilate was facing Jesus, Jesus facing Pontius Pilate, the question was asked, what is truth? So today, I want you guys to give us a breakdown. What is truth? Are there absolute truths? Or is truth fluid?
And I guess we don't have the option to sit here silently like our Lord did when he was asked that question.
Yeah.
No, but I just remind you, see where that got him.
I think truth's been, defined a few different ways. I think I'll start with, since it's radio, you can't see, I might start with truth with a little t. So T-R-U-T-H with little t. I think one of the more useful definitions that I've heard, Mortimer Adler would be one I would appeal to. Others may have framed it similarly. But for me, truth is when our intellect corresponds to reality.
Yeah, that's a very useful definition. And I think that gets away from a lot of the nonsense and shenanigans that you can get in when you look at it kind of linguistically. You know, mm-hmm. when you start to basically say truth is some equation of language, and then you have a hard time connecting it to the real world. And then you have this sort of split between the rational and the real. And I think that correspondence to things, so the truth is how, I guess the reason and rationality corresponds to reality out there, moves us away from a lot of the problems that are created by modern philosophy.
Yeah. I don't want to abandon the thought of or the commitment to and the usefulness of, say, formal logic, which does have that kind of algebraic, mathematical kind of feel to it. But so few people have ever been formally trained in logic that it really is quite – not very effective anymore.
But
you syllogisms can, if properly understood, do lead us into truth, or at least a truth and a kind of certainty.
Yeah.
But that's really not what most people are engaged in.
No.
In terms of rational, or at least let's say conversations.
Correct. And then, the multiple definitions of truth that revolve around the idea of verified belief. So, truth is a true statement is a belief that is verified in some capacity.
Mm-hmm. Verified and justified is another term I like to use. Sufficient justifications to hold to something.
But then the question always comes up, what is that justification? What is that verification? Mm-hmm. How do we know
that sufficient?
And how do we know that something moves from the realm of belief to truth?
Right. Well, and the other one I will throw out there too is opinion. And so there's the realm of opinion, right? Is people always weigh in. And I think I've said this before in the Catholic Cave, but it's probably maybe worth repeating here. I know, like in class, what I'll say is it's really shocking. I'm about to start the semester actually tomorrow, and from when we're recording. So it's an ethics class, and one of my provocative things that kind of get their attention, get things going, will be to say, "Hey, look, I know you all have opinions." I'll say this since you all have opinions, you're all very bright, you're college students, you're here, but your opinions really are worthless, and I'm uninterested in hearing them from you. And then I just pause because they give me the look, like, oh, no, what do you mean? How insulting, things like that. And who is this guy? Blah, blah, blah. And then I'll jump in after a few seconds and say, here's what I am interested in and very interested in. I'm interested in your informed opinions. And then I explain by informed, I mean, when you've taken the time to investigate the topic at hand by gathering facts, evidence, reasons, justifications, and looking at it from a variety of different angles, especially if you have a particular view that you've investigated in the opposing views on their own terms, understanding on their own terms, then you have an informed opinion, and those are extremely valuable.
Those are extremely valuable, and not only that, but they're sort of a duty to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're talking about opinions, you sort of have an obligation to make sure that it is informed as possible. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to necessarily spend your entire life questioning a particular opinion, you know, so mm-hmm. that you get all of the information, because that would be impossible. But you do have a certain obligation to make sure that your opinions are at least based on a certain number of facts.
Yeah, a certain number of facts. And so I would say there's a couple of ways that we can attain truth or ascend towards truth. And that is, one is through, say, sense perception. So if it were something that's and direct verification. So if the question arose like, Tim, where are your car keys? Are they on your person or did you possibly lock them in your car? Well, I can investigate that using senses like sight. I can see them, or I might feel it, see if they're in my pocket. But I can invest and I can reach some certainty as to their location if those are the two choices. So that's one way to attain the truth of things. And when I sort of clamp down with my intellect on the truth, I should hold firmly to it. Once I know where my keys are, I should hang on to that. That no longer needs to be like an open question for me. They're in my car, they're in my pocket. I don't need to keep asking or raising or have doubt about it. The other kind of truth, another kind of truth is, and I would say that truth that's verifiable in that sort of way is pretty rare, because most of the times we attain truth the other way, which is through what? Weighing out the information that we're receiving and comparing it to how it comports with or fails to comport with other truths that we've already acquired. So for example, it might be if you've, say you're familiar with St. Teresa of Calcutta, Mother Teresa. And if you're familiar with her life and her life of virtue and holiness and that she's been canonized, if all of a sudden a headline popped up in the news that said she was secretly a embezzler of funds, you know, or something like that, well, immediately I weigh the news and look at what I already have already affirmed to be the truth of things about her, and I would have immediate doubt or attribute it to a kind of falsehood, this new information that doesn't comport at all with things that I've already settled on to be true. So that's another way.
Yeah, you know, in that second way,
and that's Adler too, right? By the way, to give him credit, it's not all me. In fact, almost nothing I say is original.
No, and you know, honestly, I think for the purposes of talking about truth, I think that's a really important point to make, that, you know, most people value originality in thought and this quality of being able to come to a new, undiscovered truth. But the fact of the matter is, most of what is known to be true has been known to be true for a while.
Especially the most important things.
And coming up to a new discovered truth, something new and novel that humanity has never known before, is really quite rare. You know, you don't find too many new truths out there. What we find is a process of kind of solidifying and verifying and maybe building a little bit off of already well
established. A kind of development can happen, right? A slow development.
And that's what I was going to say. The second way that you talked there of sort of sorting opinions based off of what is known is also the way science works. You know, when, you know, science rarely starts, especially today, science rarely starts from the realm of
a blank slate. It doesn't happen.
Pure observation. Exactly. But you're starting from knowns. You're starting from things that you know from previous sciences. So, you know, going back to your car keys, you know, if you took that car key and you turned it and the car didn't start, you'd immediately start to investigate. But your investigation would start from the standpoint of what you know about
how cars operate,
and electronics and the nature of electricity and how, you know, okay, when I turn the key, there should be an electric charge that goes from here to the ignition. The ignition should start the motor, and you can start to investigate based not off of, oh, I need to study and figure out the way electricity works. You already know that.
Right.
And so you can start off of the principles and things of a known science. And that very often, I think, is more how we go about exploring, is based off of what we know from not only our own previous studies, but other people's previous studies.
Yeah, this is why it's so valuable to study philosophy, and why people that live centuries or even thousands of years ago still offer a tremendous amount of value to us in terms of knowledge, understanding, truth, wisdom, because some things have the truth often has a kind of perennial quality to it, meaning that it has a kind of lasting, even sort of everlasting quality to it. Now, some truths are conditional, like your age, like how old are you? And then, of course, that's conditioned based on time. And so your age is going to change over time. So I could have the truth of your age at the moment, knowing that, you know, after your next birthday, it will have changed, you know. So there's different kinds of truth. But the most important truths, I would say, are the ones that have that perennial quality to them. That's why studying St. Thomas Aquinas, who lived 800 years ago, or Aristotle, who lived 2,300 years ago, sacred scripture in the authors of the wisdom literature contained in sacred scripture have everlasting value to them.
Right. And even the sciences that develop quickly. So, you know,
lots of mathematics, especially around, say, arithmetic, have an everlasting kind of timeless eternal quality to it.
Right. But even science, you know, you go back, and a lot of people are critical of Aristotle or St. Thomas or some of these older philosophers because their philosophical knowledge might be evergreen, but what they seem to say scientifically, it seems off. We've discovered more. We recognize the way the world works in a more sophisticated way than they did.
Right. I wouldn't want to be operated on by a doctor whose only knowledge of biology came from Aristotle.
Right, exactly.
I'd be a goner. However, I would want that same doctor, though, in many ways, to be, in terms of his or her core values of their principles, to be informed by Aristotle.
And that same doctor, whether he knows it or not, is very much an heir of Aristotle.
Oh, correct.
In other words,
the patrimony of Western civilization.
Yeah, and in his studies of medicine, he followed very much Aristotle's method of discovery of the truth, of logic, of you know, the whole scientific method, to a good extent, is based off of Aristotle's logic.
Yeah, rational thought.
And at the moment, the truth is, we need to take a break. So we'll be back right after this. You're listening to The Catholic Cave on Catholic Radio Indy.
You know us as Catholic Radio Indy, but we're so much more than just radio. We're a website, CatholicRadioIndy.org, with access to great Catholic resources, including podcasts of all our local programming, podcasts that have been downloaded from all 50 states and over 40 countries on 6 continents. Yes, we are Catholic Radio Indy, but thanks to your support, we're taking the gospel of Christ to the ends of the earth. Catholic Radio Indy and CatholicRadioIndy.org.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm still Timothy O'Donnell in the cave. My fellow cave dwellers, Mark Tuttle, Kent Blanford, and we've been talking a little bit about the nature of truth in some of its dimensions. And so I want to, now we're back from the break, Mark, I want to advance the conversation and maybe take us, not a turn, but maybe a little bit of a curve. Let's talk about ways in which the truth, the quote-unquote truth, with a little t, let's go to something topical and maybe even a little controversial. What role do you think truth ought to play, is playing, and then ought to play, notice the ethical distinction, in media, especially, say, journalism?
I see.
You're not talking about fake news, are you?
Yes. Busted. Yeah, that's my way to smuggle it in.
And I think there's a
Is there such a thing?
Yeah. Well, I think there's some fundamental ethical questions in journalism that even go deeper and further down than just, you know, is there an ethical obligation to verify the facts that you report? You know, I think one of the ethical maxims that has come into journalism lately is the idea that you should be unbiased. So, you know, if you're reporting on a particular story, it's important that you get both side A and side B. Well, when you're talking about truth, that can often distort things. When you're putting equal weight between side A and side B, well, side B may be just completely lunatoons and off their rockers. And so when you report that into a story with no comment and no filter, the truth becomes distorted. So, you know, almost
a misrepresentation.
So almost by its nature, the way journalism is done today, if it's done even correctly according to the rules they've set for themselves,
that sort of binary presentation,
you're going to wind up with distortions of the truth. And so then the question is, to what extent do we expect now journalists to investigate? So it used to be long ago that a journalist, the main job was for them to investigate. It wasn't to report side A and side B. It was for them to investigate, gather the facts for themselves, and then report their opinion on which is true.
Right.
But that has been seen, that's now seen to be biased and flawed. So now the idea is, you know, kind of as Fox News modern, you know, we report, you decide. You know, that wasn't journalism. A long time ago, that would have been considered very shoddy journalism. You know, now though, that's kind of the standard of, well, we're going to put the facts out in front of you and let you decide.
Yeah, I think one of the, an example of where that goes, where that can go wrong, as you're describing it, is, again, think about the March for Life, especially in, we'll see how it plays out here in Indy, because we're recording right before the local March for Life on Wednesday. March for Life, be there, because Mark and I will be there, so you can come meet us in person. Just remember, we have faces for radio, okay? So, but the March for Life in D.C., one of the, again, my pet peeves, I think I brought up last show too, is, you know, you're going to have, let's say, for example, there's 300,000 pro-lifers there for the march, and then you might have a cluster of 20 people that are pro-choice, and then the news reporting is presents as if there's an equal presence of both sides of the issue, when it's in that the lack of context and lack of reporting of at least the proportionality, which is fact-based, gives a misleading presentation of the facts on the ground.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think there are games that, that definitely reporters play. But I think even there's something more innocent just in the nature of the way journalism investigates or doesn't investigate now, by trying to be, you know, present two sides of it, especially when you get into to matters of science, when you get into to matters of where you've got investigations that have gone on previously, then trying to present kind of both sides of that. So, you know, we've got a large body of research and evidence, and that evidence leads to conclusion A. But then we also feel obligated that we've got to present side B to that, which has very little backing, very little investigation. And, you know, there's some massive distortions that can happen because of that.
Let me ask you this, since we're on the topic of fake news, investigative journalism, what do you think of the practice of going undercover in pursuit of a good?
Ooh, now you're stirring the pot here, Tim.
Right.
Well, let's take a step back.
It is crackpot season.
So let's take a step back here. When we're talking about truth and we're talking about investigating the truth, we're talking about science. So, you know, the word science really is a body of knowledge.
Right.
And there's two types.
Scientia. Right.
There's two types of bodies of knowledge. There's the knowledge of what things are. So these are theoretical sciences. So, you know, the study of biology, the study of chemistry, those would be theoretical sciences. And then there's the studies of how to do things. And those are practical sciences. So those are, you know, engineering, medicine, those types of sciences of how to do them. So when we talk about truth in the context of what journalists are reporting, that's kind of the theoretical side of journalism. But when you talk about truth in how, then you're talking about the practical side of journalism. And then now you're talking about the question of when can the means justify the ends? Mm-hmm. And the, you know, the maxim there, I think what we've all grown up is, you know, the means never justify the ends. Mm-hmm. And I think we've got to be careful to say,
we might say the ends justify the means.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I got it backwards. You're right. The ends justify the means. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, the ends justify the means. You know, you can't make that a maxim because obviously you have to follow certain means to get to certain ends. So it's not always the ends, you know, justify the means. Sometimes they do, as long as the means are, you know, I think
licit.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So what are the ends then? I think that's the first place we got to start. What's the purpose of journalism and what's the purpose of going undercover? And so I think when you look at undercover, discovering facts, discovering things that the public ought to know or should know, I think that's the first question. So when you're talking about going undercover, the question is, what are you looking to discover? And, you know, a journalist going undercover to commit what the church teaches are sins against truth, calumny, slander, you know, other things that are basically meant to harm another person, I would say, you know, in some ways, it doesn't matter what means you take, going undercover or whatever, that's always going to be kind of wrong.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be wrong.
And I think that's an important distinction within journalism of what does the public need to know? What does the public have a right to know? And what's just our curiosity run amok, or maybe even more sinister than that, what are we trying to dig up to slander or harm somebody else's reputation?
Yeah, I think if that's the purpose to engage in investigative reporting, I think that's condemnable. And there's probably widespread agreement on that. Where I think there's also some controversy that I've read about, especially in some Catholic circles, is this. Let's say you have good reason to believe that there is a organization, a formal organization that's engaged in wrongdoing on purpose, and that wrongdoing on purpose is being shielded from scrutiny because it is potentially illegal or immoral or both.
Right.
Now, how do you? So then, the question then arises: how does one penetrate the organization in order to ascertain the truth of what their full activities are? And here, I like to bring up Planned Parenthood, very evil organization, and caught time and again with an undercover investigative journalism, doing all kinds of crazy stuff, and you know that better than I do.
Right, right. And, you know, the thing with Planned Parenthood is I think you have journalists following up on what's essentially a dereliction of duty on the part of law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
Because of political reasons,
because of unjust laws, quite honestly, laws that say, no, you can't restrict abortion, et cetera. Mm-hmm.
Do you want a quick update? I love this. I heard that an impulse that's happening now in the administration at the federal level is to remove the tax deduction for obtaining an abortion. Because right now, an abortion is classified as a medical procedure. So if you pay for it out of pocket, you can take it off your taxes. I would love to see that change.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, the question of what ought to be defined as a medical procedure. That would be a topic right. for a whole other right. show. So we could do
is a kind of medical procedure, but at the service of death.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, medicine was started on the idea of restoring health to mm-hmm. a unhealthy body.
Right.
And so, I mean, abortion's not the only one. There's a lot of procedures that the idea is to short circuit a healthy body for social purposes.
Sterilization's one.
Yep. I mean, yeah.
We go on and on.
We can go on and on. Exactly. Right. But anyway.
So what should we? So what do you think
about? I think when you're talking about undercover journalism, and you're trying to do the job that investigators who are trying to
do
enforce
authority
the law,
say, yeah,
do authority. I think I think in the case of something like abortion, where the authorities are derelict, they're not doing their duty. They're not. There's no way that the investigators are going to bring about any sense mm-hmm. of justice. Then you have undercover journalism, but at the same time, you're really reporting facts for the purpose of trying to establish justice and reestablish justice.
Yes.
And so, you know, you've kind of moved that away from just simply, I guess, trying to ascertain the facts and report the facts to the public. Because if you're doing that for the purpose of destroying illicit business, if you're doing that for the purpose of trying to destroy the credibility of somebody by reporting the facts, I would say there's something a little devious about going undercover to honestly destroy the reputation of somebody if that's solely your purpose.
I would agree with that.
We need to take a break. We'll be back with more of the Catholic Cave on Catholic Radio Indy right after this.
Have you ever thought about joining the Catholic Church? Have you just wanted to explore the Catholic faith? All you need to do is call your local Catholic Church for more information. We are always happy to help you in your journey to discover and learn more about the Catholic faith. We have classes that are almost year-round, and the classes and information sessions do not involve making a commitment, and there is no pressure to join. Please call your local Catholic parish for more information today and start the journey of one day possibly becoming Catholic as well. God bless.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle here with Timothy O'Donnell, Kent Blanford, or at least I think I'm still Mark Tuttle, and I think you're still Timothy O'Donnell.
It appears so.
And it appears like Kent's over there.
Truth be told, maybe.
Right.
Maybe.
But you're listening to the Catholic Cave, and we are discussing truth mm-hmm. and how you can know whether something's truth. And last segment, we're talking a little bit more around the ethics and morals around truth. Mm-hmm. That, you know, as far as truth goes, you have sort of an obligation to protect the reputation of somebody else. You know, there's only one of the Ten mm-hmm. Commandments that has to do with truth. And the commandment is, you know, when you teach fifth grade catechism, you sometimes kind of simplify these. And so we're in the habit of simplifying, you know, thou shalt not bear false witness to thou shalt not tell a lie or thou shalt tell the truth. The fact of the matter is, thou shalt not bear false witness has to do with protecting the reputation of other people. It doesn't necessarily have to do with not telling lies or not fabricating or not deviating from the truth. As important as those things are. But it does bring up a question. Are there times where you're called upon, you're obligated to make an utterance that does not bear a resemblance to reality? That was our definition of truth at the beginning. You know, mm-hmm. truth is correspondence with reality. And so a truthful statement would be an utterance that reflects correspondence to reality. But are there times when we are obligated to a certain extent to fib, to tell a lie, to fabricate, to make things up in order to protect somebody else's reputation?
Or life, maybe.
So are you saying it's okay to say, oh, yeah, I love the dress, honey?
See, that would be a perfect example, right? That would be a perfect example, you know. And I think, you know, their questions aren't always what
appear to be on the
exactly.
surface.
Exactly. Questions don't always correspond to reality the way
what's she really asking?
Right, exactly.
Do you love me?
She's not really asking, do you like the dress? Right, yeah. Exactly. So, yeah, but nonetheless, you know, are there times when you are under a moral obligation to say, yes, honey, that dress looks wonderful?
Yeah, Tim, get used to that since you're getting married
here
in the near future. So.
There's been some previews of that already that I'm adjusting to. That's right. I would go to maybe this comes up with, oh, I can't believe I'm going to do this. It comes up with Immanuel Kant and one of his really categorical imperatives, which is truth telling, and that truth telling is an absolute for him. And by truth telling, I understand him to mean that you know that the case is A, you're never to say the case is B on purpose.
Right. And the reason he says that is because, you know, for him, ethics is something that needs to be universal. You can't have particular ethics. You can't have something that's good for me and bad for you.
Yeah, situational ethics. Right. He doesn't believe in that either.
Exactly. You know, so if there's something that is okay for me to do, it really ought to be okay for everybody to do it. And so, yeah. You know, it comes back to, you know, I guess the simplified version of Kant's categorical imperative is what everybody's mom always said. Well, if everybody jumps off a bridge, does that? And so it's kind of the reverse of that. Yeah, you know, you have to think through, would this be okay for everybody to do? So truth telling is one of those that if you break it down that way and you look at it and you say, what would the world be like? What would the universe be like if everybody was constantly fibbing? If everybody was constantly lying and you could never trust what somebody else says,
right?
The world would be, well, the world would be like America. But anyway,
I don't know about that. But it'd be much harder to navigate.
Yeah. Address to Mark at Catholic Written. No.
Right. No, right.
You know, I say that and I'm laughing, but you know, it's alarming when you see some of the polls out there when they go and they poll the public of, is it acceptable to lie at work? Is it acceptable to cheat? Is it acceptable to be dishonest? I think most of those polls come back with a majority of people saying, yes, it is acceptable to be dishonest, to lie, to cheat, to get ahead.
Yeah, that there's to get ahead or to say, yeah, to accomplish a desired goal or outcome. The stakes are high enough, like protecting someone you love from harm. Yeah, then lying often becomes permissible in many, many people's lives.
Right. Yeah, and then you get into a situation like the guy that's driving and he comes up to a red light and he just goes right straight through it and the passenger's like, what are you doing? And he comes up to another red light and he goes right straight through it and the passenger's still getting alarmed and then he comes up to a green light and he stops and the passenger's like, you just ran two red lights and now you're going to stop at a green light? He's like, yeah, but I thought I saw my brother coming the other way. So you wind up with a situation where
kind of absurdity.
Yeah, absurdity, but you expect everybody to lie.
Yeah.
You know, your expectation is when somebody else is talking to you that they're not telling the truth. And so then the question becomes, how do you determine the truth? Because you can't take anybody's word for it.
Well, that goes back to kind of when we started the show. I think that's that first kind of truth that we were sharing about the kind of truth you ascertain through, say, direct evidence by senses. Man, if we had to do that with everything that we encountered throughout our day, it would take forever. We really wouldn't get it very far because if I said, "Hey, Mark, what'd you do last night?" And you're like, "Oh, yeah, the family and I went out to dinner at Denny's." I'm like, I'm going to need evidence for that, you know,
right.
Start showing me the bill. And then, you know, do you have any pictures? Who was actually there in attendance? You know, I start trying to marshal all that out of you. Guess what? We're going to waste a lot of time on that. And the level of importance is almost rather than accepting what you say as being true based on the what relationship and experience that we have.
Right. And so, you know, when people hear this idea that, no, it's never okay to tell a lie, that, no, you have an obligation always to tell the truth, people think, well, that's absurd. You know, they come up with the Nazi, you know, question. Well, what if there's a bunch of Nazis at my door and they're knocking, asking if I'm hiding Jews? And I am. Would it be wrong for me to tell them? No, there's no Jews here. You know, so we come up with those situations to kind of, but there is a point. I think there's a strong argument to a certain extent to say, no, the truth, we do have an obligation. We do have a moral obligation to tell the truth. And then I think here's the catch. Whenever it is safe for us to do so.
Ooh, I might have to get you to unpack what safe means.
Right. Yeah. And
because I have a different stance.
You know, here's the point. The sometimes reality can be harmful to people.
Where's your safety pin, by the way?
My safety pin.
Yeah, because if you're safe, you wear a safety pin now on your like lapel or on
I see.
So that I know how safe you are.
Right. And that, you know, that brings up safe speech in a different context.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Safe zones.
Right. Yes. You know? Yep. And it also brings up the, you know, kind of a different side of what I was about to say, which mm-hmm. is sometimes the truth can be harmful. Sometimes the truth hurts.
Right.
You know, the truth and reality is not always pleasant. And the more we dig into, the more we explore harmful sides of reality, the more people can be harmed, the more people can hurt. And so, you know, I think you do have to, I think the first ethical maxim there really does have to be what's expressed in the Ten Commandments, and that is protecting people's reputations, protecting people's integrity, protecting other people. And then from that, that's where our obligation to the truth really comes. It starts not from some dedication to the facts always matching up with reality, but a dedication to charity, a dedication to love, and a dedication to kind of building out from the concept of what's best for people, not necessarily what's always true.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I mean, I certainly would agree with the call to charity, always to guide what we're doing and inform what we're doing. There was the encyclical by Pope Emeritus Benedict XVI called Truth and Charity, and I think that's a good maxim for us. And that comes right out of Scripture. I would say here was a case where where I was really kind of struggling with what's the moral way to interact with my own mother towards the end of her life, as she was going through, increasingly advanced dementia. So she had a real impediment to being able to understand reality. And so, I think I heard it on a program that there's this kind of like the term was something along the lines of like therapeutic truth telling, where the case was made, and I kind of subscribed to it eventually, which was that it was important and incumbent upon me, based on her condition, as I understood it, to modify my language for therapeutic reasons in a way that she could understand. And so by that, it might be, she would ask often, because her at one point, you know, her memory was really became limited to things that had happened within 24 hours and really nothing beyond that. So that created, she missed her children. And so she would ask about my siblings. And then she wanted to know, a very frequent question she'd had would be, when was my sister coming to visit next? And so and it might be, I would know that it would be like in, say, 3 weeks. Well, that was like eternity. So I wouldn't tell her it was 3 weeks, which would be factually accurate, but rather modify my response to something that was more digestible, knowing that her ability to hang on to it was limited or non-existent. So I would say things like, she's coming tomorrow. Well, in her way, she was making her way through the world with the dementia. That was the same as 3 weeks away.
Right. And that takes a lot of judgment. I mean,
yeah,
that takes a lot of assessment.
But that's also a kind of slippery slope, because notice how
exactly.
I was justifying inaccuracies for a good reason. And so you could take that same sort of rationale and apply it to other situations that maybe weren't as heart-wrenching as that one.
Right. I think of that movie, A Few Good Men, you know, with
the famous scene with Jack Nicholson.
You want the truth, you can't handle the truth.
Right,
well, you know, honestly, what you were doing with your mother is a version of that, but it was a compassionate, well-thought-out well-judged thing. And so, to a certain extent, you've got to base that off of judgments about other people, about other people's characters. I mean, there.
And I was relying on some expertise. I mean, this I picked up from a program where professionals in the medical field that worked with dementia and Alzheimer patients.
Right. You know? Well, we're coming up on the need for a break again, but we're talking about truth here on the Catholic Cave. So when we come back, we'll talk about what do you do with cases where you think somebody might not be able to handle the truth.
And we'll be right back with more of the Catholic Cave on Catholic Radio Indy.
You're listening to Catholic Radio Indy, converting the culture to Christ through radio, featuring 100% Catholic programming 24/7. Do your friends a favor. Tell them about Catholic Radio Indy. You know us as Catholic Radio Indy, but we're so much more than just radio. We're a voice for the church that's seldom heard in our chaotic world. We're confirmation for the strong of faith and encouragement and answers for those in doubt. We're there to rejoice with your triumphs and to be a voice of consolation through the dark times. We're a voice for vocations and proudly pro-life. We are Catholic Radio Indy and CatholicRadioIndy.org.
Ever since we've been on the air at Catholic Radio, we've always wanted to have billboards, but they just don't fit in our budget. And since you'll probably never see a real billboard for us, I'm going to ask you to do something, to imagine one. In your mind, picture a large, empty billboard. Yeah, that's it. Now pick a background color, any color at all. Okay, then across the top of your billboard, put just two words, Catholic Radio. Make them really big. Then below that, in even bigger letters, put 89.1 and 90.9 FM. Wow, that's a great billboard. Now, if this billboard were real, all of your friends and neighbors could see it, and they'd know all about Catholic Radio. But since it's only an imaginary billboard, we're going to have to depend on you to tell your friends about Catholic Radio. Remember, Catholic Radio 89.1 and 90.9 FM. Oh, and by the way, nice choice on that background color. It really looks good.
Listening to this radio was really like the jump start of me getting to know Jesus.
This is the station that led me to Christ.
Catholic Radio Indy.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm here in the cave with Timothy O'Donnell, Kent Blanford, and I am the Brad Pitt lookalike.
Whoa! Oh, that's a whopper of a of a fib.
We are
because everyone knows I am.
Yeah, we're talking about.
You'd be surprised how often. Well, maybe you wouldn't be surprised how often people say I look like Brad Pitt. You might be surprised.
So we're talking about truth.
It's zero.
We're talking
answers,
about
it's never happened. Yeah, despite my wishes.
We're talking about truth and truthfulness here on the Catholic Cave. And here's the thing, though. Tim, that's my truth. That's my own truth.
Yes, relative to yourself.
That I am dashing. I am dashingly handsome and helplessly witty.
Kind of like a 21st century Errol Flynn.
I think you got to go back to the 19th century for people to know who Errol Flynn was.
Right. The original Robin Hood, swashbuckler extraordinaire.
But no, it does bring up a somewhat interesting question of, you do hear that phrase, well, that's my truth. To what extent is truth relative? To what extent is, especially when you're talking about the realm of opinion, and you've got opinions that aren't necessarily verifiable. So, the facts aren't necessarily present, and there are things that we may not be able to readily know. To what extent is it okay to sit there and say, well, my opinion is my version of truth, and your opinion is your version of truth, and that's okay?
Well, I would say there's a misuse of terms in the way you've presented that, I would say. And there certainly is plenty of room for honest disagreement, right? The truth is not exhaustible, and no one can ascertain the full truth of everything. It's not within our, we don't have that kind of capacity to do that in this life. So it calls for intellectual humility. And this is something St. Thomas Aquinas and others put forth, which is that when we ought to be seekers of the truth, and we ought to realize that because I would say a theological point is that because of the effects of original sin, we're limited. We have limited intellects, darkened intellects. We have weak wills. We suffer from foibles, misunderstandings. We can be fed misinformation. And so there's a lot to sort through. And so people can have sincerely held beliefs with justifications. But what we would do is, what's incumbent upon us, though, is to enter into something that I know you're a big champion of, Mark, which is we need to enter into conversations with others with goodwill, seeking to understand and be open to changing or modifying our position as we grow in knowledge, understanding, and wisdom.
And the precondition for that is recognizing that there is only one truth.
That's the big T.
And I think
talked about capital truth yet.
And, you know, we've had other shows where we talk about the breakdown of civil discourse.
Right.
And a lot of that comes about because people do not recognize the idea that there is a single truth.
Source of all truth.
Right. And
truth itself.
Exactly.
And it's a person. It's not a thing.
And a single reality, right?
You know,
I mean, I think, you know, people can say, well, you know, the world I live in is different than the world you live in. But no, really, it's not. We live in the same world. We have the same reality. We inhabit the same sphere of facts. And so there's the potential for us to be able to dialogue and talk about and ascertain through discussion what is true and what is false. But I think that supposition has gone out the window, and people are coming at that just simply from the standpoint of nobody really has access to what that truth is out there. And so I just have my firmly held beliefs, as you put it, and you have your firmly held beliefs, and there's no adjudication between them. So it's just a matter of which one of us is in a position of power right now to assert ourselves over the other one.
That's right. In relativism, which is that philosophical system that says there are no absolute truths, it has a kind of psychological balm to it, because it's soothing to not have to make the what is often a very difficult effort and sustained effort to try to reconcile or adjudicate opposing or differing positions. We can simply relativism would just simply be acknowledging, okay, well, you think it's A, I think it's B, and as long as we're not punching each other in the face, then we just ought to go on with our lives, and we leave it at that. And so there's a certain kind of moral expediency to it. But it comes at a price that's too high, which is an abandonment to truth itself.
Yeah, and I think the temptation there too to go beyond just the idea of leaving it there and saying, okay, you have your opinion, I have my opinion, let's happily coexist. You know, the only way to adjudicate truth, which, you know, I think by nature we are built to want to find truth. So
absolutely.
I think there's something natural that when somebody disagrees with us, we naturally want to find the truth and correct the other person. You know, I think this is a natural instinct of humanity, not necessarily a bad natural instinct. But when you don't have access to or you believe that there's no shared truth, it becomes a game of domination, of who can kind of make the other person submit.
Yeah, that's Nietzsche's right, will to power.
Right. And you know, I think when we started off the show talking about journalism, I think a lot of times that's kind of what journalism has devolved to. It has devolved into this, you know, nobody really knows the truth, especially when you're talking about politics, you're talking about controversial issues. There is no access to the truth. So when I, as a reporter, am reporting the facts, it's really my job to use my power and my authority to kind of make my opinion prevail.
Yeah, that's a very, very detrimental feature of our current culture, is the identification and commitment to certain goals, especially political goals, and then using abandoning truth or being of the mind that there is no absolute truth, and therefore building what's often referred to in postmodernity as a narrative. I'm going to tell a kind of story that is designed, using rhetorical devices, designed to move the masses towards the goal that I want them to. And I'm not going to be encumbered by pesky details like facts and evidence because I'm serving a greater purpose.
Right. And, you know, honestly, if you take out the idea of a shared truth, which I think is what's been stripped away first.
And that's very Augustinian of you. I mean, St. Augustine talks about that, right?
I will take your word for it.
Well, it's a sharing in the divine. It's a kind of sharing in God's mind. When we ascertain truth, it's a kind of participation in God's own divinity. When we know the truth, when we begin to know and possess the truth of things, because He's the source of all truth.
Yeah, and I think there's an even more mundane, you know, thing that we coexist within a realm of reality that we all have access to, and you know that's
coming through our senses, and reason.
Right, exactly, and that's come into question within modernity to a good extent. You know, that we have access to the outside world. We're not just subjective creatures that are kind of trapped in our own minds of interpreting.
Ooh, the brain in the vat.
Yep,
yes.
Exactly. Yep. So you know, but yeah, but when you grow up and you kind of live in that environment, this tendency to want to try to assert yourself against those that you think are wrong, it's very natural. And I think it
is once you have that position that there's no absolute truth doesn't exist, or that truth has no, it doesn't reign, R-E-I-G-N, over me. It doesn't compel me to do anything like modify my position. Then disagreements can only really be resolved through force and coercion.
Right, and they're not even disagreements. And I think that's kind of the realm that where your position on your opinions about the way the world is carries only moral value. In other words, mm-hmm. You know, you're not wrong because you're factually wrong. You're wrong because you're a bad person. You disagree with me not because the facts don't line up. Mm-hmm. You disagree with me because there's something wrong with you.
We can't seem to separate in our current setting my beliefs from my identity.
Right, and you need to be corrected because you have wrong beliefs. So, you know,
which means you're implying I'm a bad person. Instead of simply holding to, say, the wrong position.
Yeah, and you know, I think when we look around the current state of discourse out in the world now, you see this all the time. I mean, that's kind of a
social media.
Social media front page of the newspapers.
Right,
you know,
right.
I think that's and even in science to a good extent. You know, scientific investigation is now more and more tending towards this sort of power game of you know.
Well, look at the debate over climate change.
Yeah, the climate change. Yeah, and you know, here's the thing. You know, somebody that's almost sincerely agnostic on the whole question of, are we destroying our environment through, you know, heating up the atmosphere? You know, I see facts and all of that, but trying to draw a definitive conclusion about it is difficult. When I do try to seek out the facts, I can't find any, because they're all so politically laden. Any article that you look, basically, before any facts are laid out, their position on this is laid out first. And so, you know, they're coming from a standpoint of, I'm going to present you the facts to establish my case, not to investigate science, not to try to figure out what's actually going on, but to try to assert my will.
I'll tell you where that came up recently. I know we're almost out of time, but another one worth looking at, maybe a possible show topic, is the legalization of marijuana. So there's a new book out, and I just heard an interview on another Catholic radio program with the author, and it's called "Tell Your Children the Truth," and it's an investigative journalist looking at trying to find any type of evidence that supports the purported medical benefits of legalized marijuana, and he couldn't find any. So anyway, that's we're running out of time here on that one, but that's a whole nother realm of where I think the narrative for political aims is trumping, notice I got the Trump in, and trumping the facts of the matter.
Right. And, you know, I think this leads all of us to a responsibility back towards truth telling and telling the truth. and not trying to necessarily assert our opinions in the face of evidence, but reserving judgment a little bit and listening to what's out there in the real world to have informed opinions that can only lead towards knowledge.
And that is about all the time we have. I just want to sum up one thing. Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the light. If you want to seek the truth, seek Jesus. Until next time, for Timothy O'Donnell, for Mark Tuttle, I'm Kent Blanford. That's it for the Catholic Cave. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time. Be holy.
The Catholic Cave is a production of Catholic Radio Indy. Replays of this program are available in podcast form at catholicradioindy.org. Comments about this program can be addressed to kent@catholicradioindy.org or by calling 317-870-8400.
Did you miss something in this show or just want to hear it again? Podcasts of this and all our other great local programs are available 24/7 at catholicradioindy.org.